Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says isolation and loneliness can cause health risks similar to those for smoking or obesity. And elders are more likely to face isolation because of the loss of loved ones or health setbacks. There are steps family members can take to ensure elders stay engaged and connected, even during a pandemic. We'll hear about those and take your calls right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Emergency health workers are arriving in Alaska as the state struggles with a surge of COVID-19. A federal disaster response team has started work at the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports.
35 medical workers are stuck under the fluorescent lights of a conference room for orientation at the Alaska Native Medical Center. It's where they'll work for the next 2 weeks. Most are wearing khakis and t-shirts with bright bold letters DMAT. That stands for Disaster Medical Assistance Team. The team was called up just 2 days earlier, says team leader Gina Smith.
We landed last night. We started right away, as you could see in the other room. We're getting an orientation.
They're getting ready for shifts, working as physicians in the packed ICU, pharmacists, or even logistics managers. As part of the group, Smith has been to disasters from 9/11 to Hurricane Katrina. Since COVID hit, the team has been on the front lines of the pandemic.
We were in California when the cruise ships came in, helping with some triage and some quarantine of individuals, as well as some medical care for those that needed it when they came off the cruise ships.
Now, Alaska is on the front lines of the COVID crisis with 5 times the national average case rate. On Friday, ANMC announced it was operating under crisis standards of care, and doctors and nurses say they've been stretched thin for weeks. The team is made up of seasoned health workers who are taking time off their normal day jobs to work in Alaska. And they're not the only ones arriving. About 40 nurses and 10 nursing assistants started working at the hospital at the end of September as part of a state contract. And there are a handful of incoming full-time staff nurses who are getting acquainted with ANMC's IV machines at a nearby conference room.
So you hit that, and down here on these screens, you'll see all these options you can choose. So
ANMC Administrator Bob Anders says the influx of new staff may be enough to give some tired workers a break, but it won't solve the problem since hospitalizations are expected to keep rising.
We have, 600 to 700 nurses here, so 40 nurses is a help, but it's as a proportional response, it still is challenging.
The new workers bring in loads of experience from traveling to states dealing with some of the most difficult times of the pandemic, and they also bring in some new energy. Certified nursing assistant Tracy Williams has been to half a dozen states over the past year and a half. She's from Georgia, but she's unfazed by Alaska.
I have seen the moose in Maine, so that ain't no big rah-rah-rah for me either.
It's hard work, and she's seen some dark things in the ICU, but she says it's worth it.
I was in Georgia for 3 days, well, 4 days, and I was here by Saturday, Sunday. That's exhausting, but it's the motivation for what you love to do. They give you that push to say, come on, girl, you can sleep on the plane.
She's hoping to give a boost to her new colleagues here at ANMC and to help Alaska get through its darkest days of the pandemic. I'm Lex Trinan.
Indian Health Service Chief Medical Officer Dr. Loretta Christensen talked about staffing and COVID-19 burnout during a listening session Monday with tribes. She says the IHS has deployed mental health support for staff, provides time off, and trains non-traditional providers for vaccination events to allow doctors and nurses to focus on patient care, and has projects to address staff shortages.
We are working on student pathways and ways to recruit more residents and young people into building our health force. We actually have a summit this month to that end where we're looking at ways to enhance mentoring and recruiting both public health and medical professionals to the service of Indian country.
The listening session was held at the National Indian Health Board's virtual conference taking place this week. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Sanosky Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Social isolation, the absence of social interactions, contacts, and relationships, is a growing problem in Native communities and elsewhere. It's especially dangerous for elders. And the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention links social isolation for age-affluent community members with an increased risk for heart disease, stroke, and hospitalizations. The CDC also says there is a 50% increase in dementia for elders living in isolation. Those are among the physical health risks. There are also mental health setbacks, including depression and anxiety. Since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, we've been warned to limit in-person exposure to elders because they are especially vulnerable. And because elders are already more likely to be isolated, the pandemic has only increased that likelihood. Today, we'll hear more about the risks and causes of social isolation, and we'll uncover solutions for family members and others we care about. We'd also like to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. We've got several guests on the show today, and the first I'd like to bring in is Larry Curley. He's the executive director of the National Indian Council on Aging and an enrolled member of the Navajo Nation. A note of disclosure, the National Indian Council on Aging is a financial contributor to Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, the parent company of Native America Calling. Larry, welcome back to Native America Calling.
Well, thank you, Sean. Thank you very much.
Larry, when do you know someone is suffering from social isolation? Are there signs or symptoms?
Well, one of the things that we did at the National Indian Council on Aging was we did a survey this past year of elders and how were they feeling, what were they doing, that type of thing. And we received respondents back from 729 elders who responded to our survey. And of those who responded, 42% said that they often or sometimes felt isolated, and that 41% of them felt very lonely. And so the issue here is that, yes, this is the impact. The depression, you know, as you know, has an impact in terms of their physical health, their mental health, and in a lot of ways, their spiritual well-being as well. And so the impact has been significant. And when you're talking about the elderly population in this country, you know, you're talking about if that 42% is valid across the board and you extrapolate it and project it on to the total Indian elderly population, you're talking 40% of that population, which now is in the neighborhood of about 500,000 people out there who are affected by the COVID, what it has done. And so it's a tremendous problem, not only in terms of just the health problems, but just the, a feeling of being alone out there. So it has had a devastating impact in Indian country.
Now, you mentioned the COVID-19 pandemic and some of the additional stress that's been created by that. How about with regard to caregivers? Has that impacted their ability to care for elders that might be suffering from isolation as well?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we do know is that there are quite a few people out there who are providing caregiver services to their families. Nationwide, I think there was they were saying like about 45 million people right now in this country are providing caregiver services to their family members out there, and most of those, almost all of them, are unpaid caregivers. And so if you take that same number and start looking at the Indian population, we have a population out there that currently is underserved through the caregiving programs and services that are being provided. And when you start talking about, well, what are the impact of social isolation and its impact on people, increasing the possibilities of dementia, you're talking about people who are going to be needing extraordinary care, additional training to provide care for those individuals who are suffering from either Alzheimer's or related dementia. And so right now at this particular point, for example, there was a study that was done out of the state of Washington on Indians in California, where they found that one out of every three elders are going to be diagnosed with Alzheimer's or dementia within the next few years. That's one in three. Compare that to one in five in the larger population. And at this particular point, if you're talking about the 500,000 people that are elderly, and you're talking about one in three, that's a significant number of, that's one-third of that population who are going to be diagnosed. And we don't have the caregivers. The caregivers, they get stressed out. They start feeling alone. They feel like they can't do any more, and they are pushed to the breaking point in a lot. And it affects their mental health and their physical health as well. And they don't have the time to take care of themselves. And so that becomes a concern in terms of the healthcare delivery system as well.
That's absolutely shocking. One in three Native elders and Alzheimer's. So you mentioned caregivers being taxed, being overly burdened, just burnt out. So what are some actions that family members and just others in the community can do to support elders and lessen some of these severities related to isolation and loneliness?
I think that one of the things that we're looking at now, we're living in a virtual world these days. You know, you're looking at individuals on your laptop and little bitty screens. The technology is there, unfortunately, in some parts of the country, especially in Indian country, broadband is not available. And so that type of, for example, like Zoom, video conferencing, that type of technology is not readily available out in Indian country. But one can also use your phone systems and calling these individuals and seeing how they are. There are programs out there. For example, one of the largest programs out there that really makes it a point of visiting and making sure the elders are fine is the Older Americans Act Title VI programs out there. And I must say, you know, my hat's off to the staff of the Title VI programs in Indian country who have really made it a part of their priority. I think other things that could happen, and just thinking about what are some of the things that could happen, is that, you know, we need to have, I think, some of the policies, personnel policies, HR policies in Indian country change to enable people who are working for the tribe to be able to take time off without having to use their annual leave or their personal time off accumulated leaves to use that without being penalized. And I think that's something that you know, one should take a look at and seriously say, you know, this is something that's happening. There are a number of elders who need that kind of care. Let's give that caregiver a break and let family members who happen to have a job take time off to help relieve some of those workers out there as well. So that would just be just one of the things that we've been thinking about as well, is that policies could be changed at the tribal level.
Now, Larry, you mentioned the remoteness of many Native communities, also communities that might lack access to broadband, internet, technology, and such. Are there other differences that you see with regard to how Native elders face risk from social isolation as compared to the rest of the population?
Well, I think that one of the things that I think about a lot is that in terms of infrastructure, you know, in Indian country, we seem to be characterized by remoteness, people living far apart, and the infrastructure, roads are not there. The roads are not well maintained, and when you have inclement weather, it is very difficult to go out and check up on our elders that are out there. And so I think that that's one of the major, major issues. And I think that that's something that I'm hoping that this administration in Washington, D.C., their thoughts about what needs to happen in terms of infrastructure, that is something that's positively received and that has an impact in the Indian country. I think the other part of it is this, too. Indian country is characterized by multi-generational housing, you know, intergenerational housing, elders all living together in one house. You know, even with all of those people within the same household, there's still that sense of not being connected to the community, that there are things that used to happen in Indian country in the community, ceremonies, okay, of power.
Sure, sure. Thank you so much. Great insights, Larry. We're going to continue this discussion. We do have to go to break right now. If you have a question or comment for today's show, call in at 1-800-996-2848. Slavery is one of America's most shameful historical realities. And it also extended to indigenous people as well. A symposium from the National Museum of the American Indian explores how slavery affected Native Americans. We'll hear more about it and take your calls on the next Native America Calling.
Vision Maker Media sought and provided public media funding for 14 television projects for PBS Broadcasting that represent the cultures, experiences, and perspectives of Native Americans and Alaska Natives. The filmmakers represent 23 different Native nations, and this year's topics communicate social justice, climate and environment, health and wellness, and democracy in the arts. This year's awardees can be found at visionmakermedia.org, who support this program.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Studies have found that loneliness is worse for health than obesity or inactivity, and is as lethal as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. It's also an epidemic. A recent study from Cigna Corp revealed that a huge number of Americans are lonely. According to a recent Harvard University study, the cost of loneliness for Medicare is $6.7 billion a year. We're learning more about this issue today and how it impacts Native elders who face isolation. And before we went to break, Larry was commenting, Larry Curley, with regards to the remoteness of many Native communities exacerbates these issues of social isolation. Some of the roads aren't always accessible. Larry, I'm sorry we had to cut you off before we went to break. Could you finish your thought?
Well, what I was saying was that in a lot of these communities, the infrastructure isn't there. Roads are sometimes impassable in the wintertime and in the summertime with the rain. So it makes it very difficult for people to make visits out to their their elders. And I know that, for example, the community health representatives, the CHR program, is also doing a lot of that outreach to make sure that everybody is well. So that was my comment before the break.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to now bring in another guest. Joining us is Dr. J. Neil Henderson, Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota Medical School. Dr. Henderson is a citizen of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. Welcome to Native America Calling, Neil.
Hi, thanks, Sean. I'm glad to be here.
So why and how has social isolation for tribal elders become such a problem? Larry mentioned some of these risks with Alzheimer's and other issues, but what are some other things that we need to understand with regard to this growing problem?
You know, Sean, I think one of the things that is helpful and motivating people to address the issue of isolation is that it is, as we've said, a very serious condition when it is persistent, when it is lasting for a long time, and then we begin to talk about these conditions, these diseases or conditions that people get when isolation is sustained. And yet we don't always talk about how do you get from being socially isolated to having these increased disease risks. And just, I think if we understood that better, if people generally understood that better, it would be more motivating, I think, to take action, which is we will be talking about more. And so just real briefly, there's a variety of ways to explain why social isolation can cause people disease. And I've been around some colleagues that trained in medicine in England. And there they have a concern about the isolated elder who is beginning to show signs of malnutrition, not because they are not surrounded by food. They had plenty of access to food. However, the social isolation meant they didn't have another person in the household or a family in the household to either cook for or to have discussions about what are we going to eat tonight, and then to sit down to have a breakfast or have dinner, which is a social phenomenon. It's not just ingesting chemicals for us to stay alive through food. It is a social event. And so the geriatricians would get worried about the elder person and say they have fallen into the tea and toast syndrome, meaning that they're not interested in cooking anymore. They're just going to have some tea and make a piece of toast, and that's it, because there's nobody else around to engage in the social event. So that leads to malnutrition. That leads to physical disruption through lack of hydration, through the systems that are going to keep the immune system healthy and then open the person up to the development of disease. Then another way that applies everywhere is a stress response. So we have to realize that people are designed to be around others. There is safety in numbers. And we humans have known for thousands of years that one way to punish a human, a person, is to ostracize them, to take them away from a social setting. It might take the form of punishment like being sent to a remote island alone for a period of months. It also can occur when you're still around a lot of people, but they're ignoring you. So we can all imagine how bad that would feel. Well, that negative feeling is going to produce a stress response. And the chemistry of that, just real briefly, is cortisol is pumped into the blood, goes head to toe. And
So I'm sorry, Dr. Smith, that's really fascinating. So, and I'm going to sock this away, this tea and toast and some of these other issues with regard to physical ailments, because I think a lot of our listeners are thinking, well, how could just being alone contribute to some of these physical realities and health disparities? So obviously face-to-face interaction has a huge, huge role. Now, I want to get back to Dr. Henderson, but I'd like to go to a caller. We have Rebecca calling in from Santa Fe, New Mexico, and she's listening on KUNM. She's the Director for Office of Indian Elder Affairs. Rebecca, you're on the air.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you, Larry Curley and Jay Neal, for your contributions. You certainly are talking about some of the major issues that we're seeing out there among our within our tribal communities. In New Mexico, we have, for every non-Indian that has had COVID, we actually have 10 Indians that have had COVID. And it's affected so much, you know, in our tribal communities. Our senior center directors are on the front lines trying to help and support our elders, our tribal leaders, of course, our community health care workers and others. And just the stresses of COVID and even the disruption of even the grieving process has really had an impact on our seniors and our tribal communities. And I just want to thank you both for the support that you provide to our tribal communities. I've known both of you for a very long time, and I appreciate the support that you provide for our senior center directors, as well as our elders out there. And we are here to support you in whatever way we can. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for calling in, Rebecca. Appreciate those comments. We have another caller from Santee, Nebraska, listening on KZYK. His name is Melvin, and he is an elder. Melvin, you're on the air.
Good morning. I'd like to thank your guests for making a good comment. One of them that caught me was, you know, the services that are out there that could assist us can't, because you can't have relatives or uncertified people living in your house. I live by my house, by myself, and it took a lot to get one of my relatives to come live with me for the winter, because I'm a double amputee, I still burn wood, you know, and he does all that stuff and cooks real good. But it took me a long time. And he can't live here at the house, even though there's a housing shortage in Indian country. I would like him here, because one night I was by myself in the house, and I fell down. And it took over 10 hours finally for someone to come. And I fell on a bottle cap. And boy, I'm telling you, that little red thing pushed on my ribs, and it just really hurt me. And the other thing is about food. You know, I went from I'm at 180 right now, and at one time I was 310. And now I, like you said, I don't like cooking for myself. Sometimes, you know, the stove is too high and the grease pops, so I don't care to cook for myself. That's why I'm so thankful my nephew's here. He does all the painting, all that. And he left a good job. Probably one of the best jobs in the whole family, making over $50 an hour. And he had to quit that job, come back and take care of me. I just got out of the hospital. I needed somebody to amputate the other foot. And I was just thankful to have a good relative step up. That makes you proud that you got a relative.
It, Absolutely. And Melvin, we really appreciate you having that nephew. That's really heartwarming to know that you have that support. Now, I want to loop back around to Neil, because Melvin has shared firsthand what he's going through, and I think he speaks on behalf of many, many Native elders all over Indian country. Neil, is there any kind of specific training or just additional resources that could address this problem?
Yes, fortunately, those are developing, and I would suggest that people look into the information that you could find on Larry Curley's National Indian Council on Aging website with regard to ways of having Indigenous elders get connected with each other to work against the social isolation. I would also suggest that people check out resources on the International Association for Indigenous Aging, known as IA Squared. And they are involved in funding that comes from CDC that produces the programs and ways of providing respite care for caregivers. We talked about increased dementia, as Larry said. And so a lot of times the affected person can have a better quality of life when their caregiver has had some recuperation time from having a break, having someone else provide some of the care. That's what the respite care is about. And so that's an important matter as well. So the efforts to reduce social isolation are kind of difficult for caregivers and for affected people to take advantage of, because there is a risk of mental health changes, and particularly mood disorders like depression. And so depression is not just the person feels sad. That is often the primary outcome of it that people see. But there is also a very important part of it that is the feeling that people you just can't get going. You can't take action. You want to, you know what to do, but you just can't make yourself do it. And there can be two strategies here, and one is to recognize that, and if when possible, make yourself reach out, make a phone call, go somewhere in person rather than, as Larry was saying, we're so virtual now, and COVID-19 has been a big part of that. And another one is to have someone else help you get started with a connection to someone, or going to a meal site. And those kinds of strategies and resources are now developing for Indian Country, and that is going to be an extremely good thing.
Well, that's really encouraging to hear. So obviously, this is on a lot of folks' radar, and obviously organizations, healthcare centers, service providers. So there's a lot of working parts with regard to this issue. It sounds like you have medical providers, you have folks providing social services, even perhaps in some cases, law enforcement, and just a lot of different people that I think can play a huge, huge role with regard to alleviating this issue and supporting this issue and making strides towards reducing and lessening the severity of social isolation among elders. If you'd like to join our discussion today, call in at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Every day, we tackle issues from a Native viewpoint. Tune into this station at this time every weekday. Go to NativeAmericaCalling.com to find a station near you. You can also listen live anywhere in the world online at nativevoiceone.org. Larry, we just have about a minute or so. Could you just add a little bit of more details with regards to how some of these factors play out with regard to Native elders?
Well, all of these
things that variables that Dr. Henderson referred to, you know, to me is that you have mental issues, you have health issues, you have social issues, you have, you know, the entire realm, you know, people call that the social determinants of health. And those affect all of those, housing, education, all of those. And what you just mentioned, I thought was very interesting, because one of the things that we are doing at the National Indian Council on Aging is that a lot of those programs, the law enforcement, the judicial system, the social services programs, the schools, the education, all of those are part of a service delivery system. If one could just sit down and bring all of those elements together, all those programs together to concentrate on the needs of our elders, they would have a comprehensive, coordinated, collaborative system that would help elders. And the people in the field of aging call that long-term services and support system. And that's one of the things that we're trying to work on as well, because one organization can't do it. One tribal agency can't do it by themselves. It takes the whole community, it takes the whole tribe to coordinate, collaborate, and provide these services. And I think that that is a way that, that can alleviate some of the social isolation, making sure that people are feeling better, feeling well, and feel secure about people looking after
them. Okay. Okay. Thank you for those insights again, Larry. We have to go to break right now, but we'll be right back. I'm your host, Sean Spruce.
Program support is by Montana State University in Bozeman, home to MSU's Native American Studies Department and over 750 Native students from 35 states. MSU is proud to announce the October 16th grand opening of its new American Indian Hall, a project over 15 years in the making. American Indian Hall, a crossroads of culture and student support. Montana.edu/AIH.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Are the elders in your life cut off from regular human contact? We're talking about social isolation, especially from elders. And I'd like to bring in another guest to offer more ideas and more experience with regard to this issue. Joining us from Fort Washakie, Wyoming, is Kelly Vasquez. She is the Social Services Director at Morningstar Care Center. Welcome to Native America Calling, Kelly.
Thank you.
So, Kelly, from your point of view, what does loneliness and isolation look like at the nursing home?
For us, the loneliness and isolation is the elders are no longer allowed to come and go and be with their family, go shopping, do different things. They've had to spend quite a bit of time in isolation in their rooms when we've been in quarantine, and just taking away from that overall community feeling that we try to make our nursing home be.
So what do you, you're a team at Morningstar, what do you folks do to lessen these risks of elders facing possible isolation and loneliness?
We have a great activities department. We keep a full day from 8 to 5 every day of activities going in smaller groups. We've incorporated companion meals so that a staff member will go sit with the elders while they're eating, especially when they're in their rooms and they're not allowed to go to the dining room. That has been beneficial to keep that loneliness at bay.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. Can you share any specific examples of how the pandemic specifically has impacted some of the elders that you work with? I think you mentioned that when we spoke before the show that you have 45 beds at the Morningstar facility. That's a pretty big care center.
45 beds, and we have seen a decrease in admissions with COVID being in the forefront. It was a lot harder right during the middle of the pandemic to bring people in due to the restrictions in place, but that's starting to ease up some, and we're starting to get more admissions now. There's a lot of fear behind coming in.
Fear just in terms of just being in the facility and the risks involved with people being too close together, is that primarily it?
Yeah, the fears of the people that are looking at nursing home placement is the if there's been the virus in the building, how long it's been since then, and also having a roommate and not knowing them and bringing in possibly if they have the virus as well. So there's been a lot of fear that's been behind the admission process as well.
Okay. Now, earlier Neil mentioned some of these symptoms of, and it was really an eye-opener for me that some of these physical ailments can be caused by people just not eating properly, maybe not maintaining proper hygiene, just not taking care of themselves, and that has physical ramifications in many cases. So do you see issues like this of elders not eating or just kind of withdrawing, similar to what Neil described?
We do. We've seen a lot of it of the elders when we had to stop communal dining and eating in their rooms, their intake decreased and their desire to eat also decreased. So we implemented like snack boxes, went and met with them all and figured out some of their favorite foods, had them readily available in their rooms, and then the companion where we go in and sit with them while they eat, to try to curb that, and we have weekly weight meetings.
Now, we're also talking. Okay. Well, that's good to hear. Certainly it offers a lot of hope. So earlier we were talking about training and how, you know, that can care providers can have more resources and more knowledge and more skills. Have you been able to provide any enhanced training during the pandemic with regard to assisting Native elders that might be facing isolation?
We do just a monthly in-service with our staff, and we try to pick something each month that is directly correlated to what's going on in the community.
And do people come in as well, like maybe artists or storytellers or musicians? Are they able to experience some of that interaction as well?
So we're starting to get to have more volunteers in the building, and we're starting to be able to, we have somebody that comes in and does piano and music. We have some churches that have been coming in, but there's still a lot of restrictions for visitation and volunteers in the setting.
Now, how about for you as caregivers? You know, we're hearing about some of these caregivers just being maxed out. So is there support for just the caregivers to maintain their workload as well and deal with some of the stress that they're having to grapple with?
Yes, we have an open door policy with our director of nursing and administrator here. And if the staff feels like they've hit their limit, they come in, they're able to talk to us about it, and we're able to work around the schedule to try to help alleviate some of that.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for sharing all of these details. And my heart goes out to all of your folks up there. Thank you again for your service and for just being on the front line there and caring for our Native elders. Can't say enough about how much I admire and respect what you folks do. We're going to go ahead and take a call now. We have Carolyn calling in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Carolyn's listening to KUNM. Carolyn, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much. And I want to say that my heart really goes out to Melvin and others like him. Such a painful story. My thoughts about diet are in regards to the gentleman and the tea and toast comment. As a nutritionist, I think I've observed that the longer elders and others can get really nutrient-dense foods in them while they have a little window of appetite, that it helps to prevent falls because they're getting more electrolytes, they're getting things to support their connective tissue, they're getting more nutrient-dense and available stuff from things that can be done in a crock pot. I'm a big fan of bone stocks, and it's an easy way to do. And then when you have the stock, you can cook buckwheat or wild rice or and do a big batch of it. And then you're not cooking all the time, and it's not such a chore. And then by adding things like different dried seaweeds or other pantry-stable nutrient-dense and healing things, mushrooms, bonita flakes, different things can really pack more punch into when they do have that appetite. And thank you so much for addressing this a bit. And I pray for the elders. And if I lived near Melvin, I would cook for him for sure. Thank you.
Well, Carolyn, we really appreciate those comments, and I'm sure Melvin does too, and especially practical tips like that and indigenous dishes that you suggest that sound not only tasty but also nutritious. I'm sure if you cook for Melvin, I'm going to come hang out too, because that sounds like one heck of a good supper. We also have another caller from Net Lake, Minnesota. His name is Darren. He's listening on KBFT, and he owns a business. Darren, welcome to Native America Calling. You're on the air.
Hey, nice. Thanks for taking my call. I guess it's not really a business yet, but the idea behind the business or a nonprofit or whatever it's going to become is going to be exploration of monuments, landmarks around. For right now, it's going to be around northern Minnesota. And what I want to do is allow like an interactive tour for people via drone so they can get out and about virtually. I know everyone hates hearing that word virtual, but I want it to be interactive where people can, message the pilot. They can direct where it's going. They can ask questions about what's going on to kind of get them back out in the environment, because some of these elders, unfortunately, cannot get back out and see these places that, they've missed out on. So why can't we bring that to them?
Well, that's a really novel idea, a solution. Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like a really, really interesting way to keep folks connected. Good luck with that project, Darren. And I want to circle back around and talk to Larry again, because he mentioned just some of the numbers and the huge numbers of folks that are elderly folk that are struggling with isolation and loneliness. And I know that in many of our communities, it's our elders that are the protectors, and they maintain so many of our languages, our traditions, our cultural ceremonies. And what we've seen with the pandemic and the way it swept through some of our communities is we're at risk for losing more of that knowledge and those teachings because of issues like this. Larry, could you provide a little bit more detail into just what that means for our communities?
Well, with the National Indian Council on Aging, our mission statement reads, to advocate for improved comprehensive health, social services, and economic well-being of American Indian and Alaska Native elders. For me, that's the mission. We say that. We can say that on the surface of our tongues very easily. But really, what really is NICOA about? NICOA really is about the survival of Indian tribes in this country, because it is our elders that have the knowledge, and they have the wisdom, they have the traditions, they have the ceremonies, they have the language still in them. They're still utilizing it. They have all of that. And with this pandemic, what has happened is that we're losing a lot of that particular characteristic that makes us Indian tribes in this country. And the more we lose these elders, the more we lose what makes us an Indian people. I was just looking at some of the numbers, and as I indicated, there are 7,000 Indian individuals have passed away due to the COVID. And of that number, about 4,200 were elders. 4,200. And if they were an elder, just take their average years, 60 years of age, that's 60 years of experience, knowledge, wisdom that we've lost. And if there's 4,200 have elders who have passed away, we've lost 252,000 years of knowledge and wisdom that we'll never get back. We will never get that back. And I am very thankful for the fact that tribes around the country have taken extraordinary measures to take care of their elders, because they realize that they hold the key to the language, to the history, to the customs, to the traditions of that particular tribe. And that, to me, has been a good thing that has come out of it, out of this pandemic. And I think that now with the vaccine that's out, NICOA has been very strongly encouraging our elders and all tribal members in this country, take the shot. Please take the shot. We can't lose any more of us anymore. And once we have those shots, we can feel a little bit better, and we can open up our communities a little bit more, and we can reduce some of the isolation, some of the depression, and the loneliness that our elders are feeling. So that shot would help, really help, in reducing some of these physical and mental issues that we're now dealing with. And one of the things that's happening that I just wanted to mention as well is that Senator Ben Lujan and Senator Susan Collins just introduced legislation recently called the Equity in Neuroscience and Alzheimer's Clinical Trials Act of 2021. That says what he wants to do and what they want to do is to make sure that when they do clinical trials on Alzheimer's and research in that area, that tribal members and people are included in that study, because Indian people are sometimes different. The impact and their reaction to certain kinds of drugs are different, but they need to make sure that they are included in those studies. So I think that's something that we're looking at right now on that piece of legislation. And but as I said, we are here to make sure that tribes survive 2,000 years into the future. And I say that because when I was living back on the East Coast, I would drive over rivers and drive over bridges and see these hills named after tribes that no longer are here. They're extinct. And I, through our elders and their language retention, their knowledge, their wisdom, we can make sure that Indian tribes are here for another 2,000 years. So that's the ultimate mission.
Larry, thank you so much. Thank you so much. That's just well stated. That's all we have time for our show today. I want to thank our guests, Larry Curley, Neil Henderson, and Kelly Vasquez. This has been Native America Calling. I'm your host, Sean Spruce.
Support by the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian, presenting Youth in Action, Indigenous Peoples Day, Black Indigenous Youth Advancing Social Justice, a virtual program that highlights youth of blended Black and Native heritage who use art, activism, and policy to advance Black and Indigenous solidarity and effect positive change in their communities. Available on October 11th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time at americanindian.si.edu. Vision Maker Media sought and provided public media funding for 14 television projects for PBS Broadcasting that represent the cultures, experiences, and perspectives of Native Americans and Alaska Natives. The filmmakers represent 23 different Native nations, and this year's topics communicate social justice, climate and environment, health and wellness, and democracy in the arts. This year's awardees can be found at visionmakermedia.org, who support this program.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.